Okay. Today we're going to be continuing going into different types of database file organizations and how the database management system will access data. The good thing for us is that we don't have to care so much about it because the database management system implements all this in the data manager, so it takes care of all of this. But when we design a database, the final step in the design is to choose a database management system and the database engine. And different engines use different access methods and file organizations. So knowing how the file organization is and the strengths and weaknesses of the various types of file organizations will help us choose the right engine and the right database management system. So that's why this is relevant. There will be overlap here with what Frode is teaching in algorithms, which means that I'm not going to say so much about the details. I'm not going to go through insertion of data in balanced trees and deletion of in balanced trees, because I assume that you know balanced trees. I assume that you know heaps and you know hashes. So this is just to explain how this is done in the database system and to refresh it so that we can talk about alternative database engines. Before going into this, I got a short request for giving you a short reminder from the ones responsible for your studies, because you probably know the Studiebarometer. And the 15th is the deadline for submitting your feedback. If we look at the statistics, we don't score very high in terms of how many have actually done. So green means that they're completed. Gray means they are on the way, and they stopped somewhere midway. Red means they haven't even started. So you can see the engineers, 20%. The operation and security, 33. The programming, 32. So there is still some options for improving. So give feedback. It does. I mean, we are not going to force you to be happy and just say, "Oh, I'm happy," and everything. Honest feedback is what we need. So spread the news, or news is old news. Spread this information to everyone and try to have as many as possible to sign on to this, because it's helpful for us and it's helpful for future students. Okay, so let's skip down. We did all of this already. So this is where we're going to be starting, talking about the file organization. So if we think about the database. Now, as I said yesterday, a database management system here is storing data on disks. So here, either all of the disk or parts of the disk. In large systems, this would typically be the disk is reserved for the database management system. But on your computers, and in many cases, the disks will be shared among various apps. But in here, you have files, maybe called .db, .db, or something, which are the database files that are under control of the database management system. And then inside the files, and the files are divided into blocks of fixed size, disk block size, could be 8K or 16K typically. And inside the blocks, you have a number of records. How many records you can fit depends on the size of records. But you try to, of course, the database management system is trying to put them as much as possible. So here you have a record. And in the record, then you have the fields for the ID, for the first name, last name, gender, and whatever attributes. They are stored inside a record and multiple records inside a block and blocks in a file. And files are under control of database management system. For instance, Oracle and some of the larger systems, one file may not be large enough for storing all the data. Oh, and you may want to spread the information over several disks. And then they define what they call a table space. So if you have multiple disks, then a table space can have files on different disks. And the database management system is dealing with a table space. It's kind of an artificial group or a virtual disk that has multiple files. But again, all of this is fine with us because this is what the database management system deals with. The only ones that will have to care is the database administrators because they need to think about how to configure, how to set it up, and as it evolves, how to extend. There is a course next year that Kyrie is teaching. I think it's called Service Architectures or Managing Service Architectures, something like this. I strongly recommend doing that if you are interested in the more operational aspects of databases, how to set it up, how to secure it, how to extend it, to configure it. That's a very nice, good course that will go much more in depth on these things and what we're going to talk about on Friday, recovery. It's also one of the topics that we'll be talking more about. So there are two important issues to deal with for the database management system. And one is how records are laid out in the file, both in terms of the structure of the individual record, and then in what order are they put in the file? How are they organized within the file? So one is the structure of the record, and secondly, how are records ordered or grouped inside the file? This is where the various access methods differ. More on the how they are spread out in the file, more than on the actual appearance of the record. That's pretty much pretty similar. So what do we want? Of course, we would like it to be compact. Why is that? The two advantages of having a compactness. One is, of course, we don't waste space, because if you have a large file or large files and we don't really need all that, then we have wasted some space. But secondly, if the data isn't compact, then typically there is lots of fragmentation. There are lots of space in between. So if we want to read data, we would probably have to read more records when they are sparsely populated, when they are compact. So it's both in terms of the amount of space we actually use, and it's also about how much data we need to read for every operation. There are two, as you're going to see throughout the day, there are two conflicting types of operations when it comes to how we organize data. One is how fast it is to retrieve data, and that's typically what we think of. We think of the speed of the database is how fast it can retrieve the data for us. But that's not the only question. It's also a question of how fast it is to insert and delete objects. So if you think about a database for a grocery store, there aren't too many general queries, but people buy and a lot of stuff all the time, so you need to update what is still available, what's sold. So in some cases, there is more updates. And if you have updates, then some of these structures we're going to talk about give some overhead. So you don't want that overhead, because you may sometimes want to have a fast insert and deletion, and you can afford more expensive retrieval. But in other cases, it's not so much update, and you really need fast and efficient retrieval. So it's important to remember that when we decide on the structure, we have to know the access patterns. We have to know the usage. And this is fine in the beginning. Maybe we have an idea. But as time goes, that pattern may change. So we may need to reassess. We may need to monitor the performance of the database and sometimes need to step out and see what are the actual use of the database now and change the kind of the database structure, file structure and or indexes. The easiest representation for a record is when we have fixed sized records. Fixed size means that all the attributes have a fixed size in terms of bytes. So if we, for instance, have ints and fixed length characters and booleans, we know what they are. And in that case, it's easy because we don't we know exactly what each record would be like. So we have our block here, and that's something, for instance, 16K. And then for each, we need n bytes for each record. We know exactly the size, so there's no need to store any pointers or anything saying where the next is, because if you need the a given block, we can find it, because there are the blocks. The first block would be at start byte zero, and the next one we just multiply with the block size to know where the next one is. So this one is 3n, 2n, 1n. 4n is the offset of the first byte. And then when we know the byte size, or sorry, the block size, we can find the block by finding just the index of the record and find what is the block number. And knowing the block number, we can, the record number, but dividing the record number with number of blocks, we know what block number. So then we know that it is going to be, this is block M, and this is block M minus 1, and then we have block M plus 1. So by knowing the offset inside the file, this is record number 3416, we can find, and we know what the block size is, we can find what byte it is, and then we can divide with the block number. And inside the block, we can find what actual record it is. One important thing here for most of the database design is that we don't want block or records to go across block boundaries. So there may sometimes be fragmentation here, because at the very end, there is something that you can't use. Otherwise, you have to split the block. So we want a block to be completely inside a record to be completely inside a block. The only exception we will talk about a little bit later is when you have large objects, images or large text that obviously can't fit in one block, then there's an exception. But other than that, we have the records within the block. So sometimes we need to keep in mind that we have to have, we can't use all the space. We have a little bit of internal fragmentation. And to get access to this record, we need first to get the whole block into memory. And when you have the block in memory, we can just go to the index of the record within the block. So, if our record contains an int, which would be 4 bytes, a date, 3 bytes, and a product number, which is 16 bytes, and a number, 4 bytes, then the block size would be, adding all these numbers up, would be 27. If we have a 4K block, and we divide 4 cave, which is 4096 by 27, we found that there's 151 complete records, and there's going to be fragments of record, but we delete it. That's why we have the floor function here. It means that we have the lowest integer number for this division. So we see here, if you multiply, we find that there are 19 bytes that we're going to lose per 4K block. So it's not a lot, but a little bit, because we can't fit a record into 19. They are all 27. Variable size records are a bit different, because now we don't know how much. So we could, for instance here, if we have variable size blocks, and if you want to use the same mechanism, we don't store any pointers or anything about how long each field would be, then we have to set aside a number of fixed size blocks. But if this one has very short strings, then most of it is just empty, no values, because it does have very short fields. This one may fill it almost all up. And this one. So we have much more fragmentation this way. There, within each record, there is set aside space for worst case, but rarely do we have worst case. So if you, for instance, say, okay, people may have long names, so we'll say 64 characters last name, which means that if your last name is Mu, then you have 62 wasted bytes to store your name. So because of that, we want to have some pointers at the very beginning of the block that will point to the various fields. So the structure and how large the pointer needs to be depends on how long the fields can be, because the pointer is basically just how many bytes. So it is a count for the next field, and if we could fit that in 1 byte, then we can have a 1 byte pointer. But if the record is longer, we may need 2 or 3 or 4 bytes for indexing the various fields. Because in this case, you have the customer ID, first name, which is a varchar, last name, which is a varchar, email, which is a varchar, and the zip number or postal number, which is just a small int. Now, the int and small int doesn't cause any problems because they are fine. But what caused the problem are the variable records. And the decision in InnoDB, which is used by MySQL, is that when you have variable length fields, you will have pointers to all fields, even the fixed size fields. You could have done this a bit differently by having, for instance, all fixed size fields first, and then you know where the variable fields start, and you could save yourself a couple of pointers maybe, but that's up to the database management system to decide. So in this case, we have pointers. They are 2 bytes each, so in addition to the actual length, now we have a statistical distribution of the actual length, because they don't have the same length, so how much data would go into the various fields would depend on the distribution of name lengths and the email lengths. Some will have long, some will have short, and you will have a mean and you have a distribution here. So why are these pointers this way? So we have pointer to the end of the field, and the end of this field, and end of the various fields. Because if you think about the use, you could make it into a chain, a link, forward link. So for each you have a link to the next field, and then a link to the next field. But that will mean that if you were to process, sometimes you know that you're going to have the third block. So how do you find the third block? Well, you could just skip through the whole block by going through the first pointer. Then you get to the start of the second block. Then you get to the start of the third block, and you could go on. So if you had it chained so that this one points to the first field, there's a link to next, you have to go through the whole chain of links. This is an easy way to skip blocks. And then You just by going backwards, you know that you're going to have the third field, and you know that this is the pointer to this one, and then you can go and find it. So when we have variable size records, we can get away with this fragmentation, but we do have the extra cost of having these pointers, and we may have some issues if a record is growing in size or shrinking in size. What do we do with that? So there are the nice thing with fixed size records is that they're easy to replace, and if they're updated, they will always remain the same size. But not necessarily so with their variable size records. Yeah. The reason for pointing to the end of the block is that if you know that the data you have is in the 16th block, and you need to go to the 16th block, then by using the end pointer, you get from block 0 to block 1, and then you get the next end pointer here to block 1, to block 2, block 3, block 4. So you can go quickly through the whole, because a block will typically contain many. So what we have here is that if you assume that these are real ones, these are other ones, then this one would be the end, and then you will find to the end, and then you will find to the end, and then you find to the end, and then you find to the end. So finding the number X block is just following these pointers, and then you're at the beginning of the block that follows it. So it's quick for traversing. So the database record may also contain a lot of data that is not user data. The database also needs to store data about the records. For instance, the number of fields, the length of the field pointers may need to store a flag for that the record has been deleted, because actually deleting might be expensive. It's cheaper to say, okay, delete it, just a cross, it's deleted. Which means that eventually, so this one is deleted, and this one is deleted. If there are too many, then there is a lot of skipping to do when you go through the chain here. So at some point, you may want to compact it and remove the deleted object. But that's the easiest way to delete, is just mark it as deleted. You have a flag for null fields, because null means that it's not assigned a value. Doesn't mean that the value is null or zero. It means not assigned, so you need a special flag for that. And then you typically have a field saying, okay, this is null. And then you have some database specific fields. You may in the table you don't have an ID for each of the rows, but the database may want to use it for their own purpose. There may be information related to transactions that this record is locked, and all of this ends up in MySQL in DB to 25 bytes. So it's quite a lot of data that is not available. So for each record, in addition to the 16 bytes we need, we have these 25 bytes that the database adds. So there are, in doing the calculation, there is quite a lot to take into account. But again, in general, we don't need to worry so much, because in the beginning, we need to design a database that we think should be good enough, and then that means we think it's going to be this much data, and we add a little bit for overhead, and we add a little bit for growth, and that's where we start. And after that, we just need to monitor and see how it goes. Okay, just to see that we got the picture. So if we have a database with a table of music genres, and we want to store a record for jazz genre, and in the database we have two fixed size fields, the code and the name. One is 3 bytes, the other is 32 bytes. And how would the record holding jazz look like if you assume that there are 6 bytes first with the database specific field? Any suggestions? Fixed means that they are all the same size. So we know the size, and the size will be 12
plus 3, 15, plus 32, that would be 47. Isn't that right? So starting at 0, and next one starts at index 47. And since it's fixed, we just put them out. So the first 6, the next 6 will be DB specific. Okay, then we will have jazz. So this will be 6, this will be 12, this will be 15. So this will be 3 bytes. And then jazz. So we will have J, A, Z, Z. But this is fixed size. So this is 32. So this one goes all the way to the end of the record. These are then all just empty spaces. Typically, it will be end of character sign here, saying this is the end of the character, which you won't see, but it just tells us that this is the end of character sign. And you will just, everything else is just empty, it's not used. But it's reserved for the record. Now, what if the content was UTF-8 encoded? Now, this is a trick question. Find out, because we need to know the database. Databases may have different approaches here, because UTF-8, if you look at the details, is variable length. So the ASCII characters are just 2 bytes, then the Scandinavian characters and other characters are within 3 bytes, and then you have the Chinese and all these other characters that really need 4 bytes. So it's variable length. In MySQL, they use 3 bytes for UTF-8, which means it's fine for all Western European characters. It's not so fine for Chinese characters. If you use UTF-8 that we have been using, if you remember the UTF-8 Danish CI, we're going to spend 3. So they're going to. So this one is not going to be 3 bytes. It's going to be not 1, but 3 bytes each. So this is going to be 3 times as large, times 3, and this is going to be times 3. If you use UTF-8, much larger fields. So that's important to remember when I don't know if Depte talked about it in the SQL. You have if you query the length, you need to query character length and not just length, because that will give you you need the actual length, because the character length will just tell you how many characters, but there might be multiple bytes per character. So you need to deal with two different functions, depending on if you want the byte length or the character length of a string, if you use UTF-8, because then there's more characters. Now, if you want to have the full UTF-8, then you need to use a different encoding in MySQL. There's an MB4 UTF-8. If you use that one, it's setting aside, there's a multi-byte, so it's setting aside 4 bytes per each. And then we need to multiply this by 4. Because it doesn't want to have variable length records just because there's UTF characters in there. They're just putting aside more space, which means that the database is going to grow. Now, if it was variable length, then we would need some pointers here. We would need a pointer to the end of the first field. And assuming that we don't need pointers for the database-specific part, and we need a pointer to the end there of the field. And then we didn't... Sorry, I was a bit too fast. We don't need this part. We shrink it. Here. Which then would mean that we are just 4, so this is
19. Well, plus, if you say we, in this case it's short, we need, no, we need two bytes. So this is now 4, this is 10, this is 16, this is 20, and then this is 24 should be. I don't know if the math was okay here. This should be, yeah. You do the math. It's pretty close. So you have the extra pointers, but we save all the space in the end. By the way, if you downloaded the lecture notes, I did a couple of changes this morning, so there are some additional content to the PDF. So you may want to refresh your cached PDF, if you can call it that way. So there are some changes to among these things, some of the exercises that I have changed a little bit or added a little bit more to it or to them. Is this okay? So you get kind of the difference between the fixed size in which we reserve a fixed size. Also something strange here. Is it hard to read? No, don't worry about numbers. You need to add them up. So if this was 0, then this should be, I guess, 3, because 1, 2, 3 is the end of the 3, and then this should be 3 plus 6 is 9, so I think I started with a little bit. Try to do the numbers yourself. It's basically starting from 0, and you add the size of each of these. And then, because this is the end, 15, and this is, so I think this should be 23, which I started by seeing, 23, and 14 plus 3 should be 15, 1, 2, 3, 18. I don't get the numbers. Don't worry. Try to do the numbers yourself. 9 plus 6 is 15. 15 plus 3 should be 18. And 18 plus 4 should be 22, should it? Okay. That should be simple to do, but it didn't turn out to be that simple. Seems like it should be like this. Now, what if we, as a question? Sure, if I got the question. So, in variable record sizes. Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah, but the variable records, you need the pointer per record because you don't know how much each of the records will be. In the fixed size, you don't need to because it's known in the dictionary, in the database. You know that you have first an int. The dictionary will tell what the layout is. So first you have an int, which is 4. Then you have a date, which is 3. So it knows exactly the layout. But for variable, it doesn't know. So you need to have that per. And I don't think any databases are using variable size block length. So the block length is fixed on the files for all the database systems because that's much easier to deal with. So if they don't have that underlying, they will have their own file system that will have it. So I have not heard about any file databases using variable length files or blocks. Which means that we need to do something like this when you have a field that expands more blocks. So we need to, for a large object, let's say an image or a video or a large piece of text that is more than the 16K, then this is the field, if you think about it, when it's in memory, but stored on disk, you need to break it into blocks. And then what you do, you break it into blocks, and for each block, you need to reserve a little bit of a pointer to the next, because they may not be stored consecutively, they may be stored a little bit around, and you need a pointer to the next so that you can get them back again in memory and concatenate them and get them back in memory. Now, these are the ways in which we can store file or records on a file. So heap files is a little bit different. So you know heap from algorithmic methods. Now, a heap file is a little bit different.
So just keep an eye on when I go through that part. But ordered files, meaning sorted order, and hash files is pretty much what you have seen before. So what we are addressing now is how we lay out the files with, or the records within each file. How are we going to do that? And remember that the file is owned by the database. So typically, when you create a new database, it will create files, and it can create a file pretty big. It doesn't have to be a file that is dynamically growing. It could allocate a big file for its table, even if you just use a part of it. So this is all that the database management system is deciding. The heap files are the simplest ones. You just store records at the very end of the file. You just, like, you throw something on a heap, it's going to be on the top. You just add it at the very end. So the records in the file are in the order on which they were inserted. And you could just easily add by going to the end, very, very quick. You need to know the end of the file. You just go and add one at the end of the file. Very convenient if you, for instance, have bulk loading, meaning that you have a huge database or you have a huge data repository, and you're going to load all that into the database. So you just put it at the end, don't have to worry about anything, just add it to the end. And it's also quite convenient if every time you use your database, you need to read all data anyway. There are cases in which you're always going to read everything. Then this is convenient, because you need to scan through everything, and then the easiest solution might be the best. You just go from the beginning and you scan through everything. You don't worry about order. You don't worry about anything. And when deleting, to avoid extra work, you just delete and mark it as deleted. And it occupies space. So eventually, the file will have lots of deleted records in there, which means that there is wasted time and wasted space. But periodically, when there's too much deleted records, you may need to compact it. You may need to reorganize the file. Ordered files, meaning sorted files. So then we have a key, the primary key, typically, that we used for ordering. And if we sort them on the primary key, the good thing with that is that it's easy to find, if you try to insert, it's easy to find if there was already a key there. If you think about the heap, if you want to insert and you have a primary key, you basically have to go through every record in the file to see if that key is already in use before you can allow it to be inserted, because the integrity constraint of a primary key is that it should be unique. Only one record is a primary key. And if you have a heap, the only way to know is to go through all the other ones. In a sorted file, it's fine. You just find where it should be inserted. And if there's already a record with the key there, you know it can't be done because the key is being used. So it's an easy way to check that the primary key integrity constraint is valid. We then, when we insert, we insert in place. So we find where it should be in the file. That's where we insert it, which means that we need to start moving other records that are after us. So if you say we have ID 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, and you would like to insert 4, then this one needs to be shifted down, because you need to have 4 in here. So afterwards, this will be 4, this will be 5, this will be 6, this will be 7, and 8 have moved back. So, as I was saying, if we need to know, is retrieval more important than insert and delete? Because here, insert and delete is costly. When we insert, we need to push back. When we delete, we need to either we just mark it as deleted or we need to compact it. So this is quite suitable if you need to return the elements in a certain order, because they're already sorted in this order. And also, if you're going to search for a range from 4 to 7, you can just go here and you can continue going until you pass the outer bound. So sorted, these are even more important, but interesting when it comes to indexes. But in the primary file as well, if you have retrieval based on the primary key, for instance, the username, then and you want to list users in order of username, then you could just go along. They will be sorted in username order already. And if you want all usernames starting with Per, then you find the first Per and you continue. As long as it's still starting with Per, you know that you should return it. And you may need to reorganize or just mark them as deleted when you delete delete records. Hash files. You know hashing from algorithm methods. So the idea here is that you have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, and 10. So you have from 1 to 9 buckets, and somehow you hash. So if the primary key is, for instance, postal code, then 1850 will go in there. 2816 will go in 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we go in there. So, and here in each bucket, you have room for a number of records. Are you familiar with these mechanisms? What if, if this one is full, and you are to insert 7400, and the bucket for zeros is full, what do you do then? And the open addressing means that we just continue seeking the first available slot everywhere. We just put it in there, even if it's not, which means that when we try to find, we need to see if it's full, then we need to continue sequential scanning to see if we can find one. Unchained overflow basically means that we have some overflow buffers. And if you couldn't fit in here, we just put in the overflow buffer. They're unchanged. We just put in the very first and put in overflow objects, which means that when we seek, if it's not here and this one is full, then we need to seek the whole overflow buffer. And the chained overflowing means that for each of these, we have the possibility of having an index to a certain overflow. So we have overflow 0, 1, 2. And if this one is the first one to overflow, we say, OK, overflow bucket is 0. And then we could seek only in here. And we come to the end of this one, we know that it's not there. So this is the chained overflow. Is this familiar from algorithm methods? The hashing should be just open addressing. OK. The chained one is, it's all about the distribution data. It's all about costs of managing this. So I thought overflow was the more unchained overflow was the more typical, but because then you have a big space here. The question here is how many buckets you need, because once you start using one, you have reserved it for one of these buckets. So the final one, multiple hashing, means that in here we hash on the first digit, and if it's full, then we say, okay, then we hash on the second one, and then it's going in here, in number 5, if there's space. So we have a multi-hashing. If the first one doesn't work, then we try the second one. Again, when we try to look for it, if this one is full and wasn't here, we need to try to find the second hash and seek in here if it's there. These are various options. It's very convenient when we're going to retrieve based on postal code. It's not good for equality, but sorry, for a range. If you want something from 1815 to 1860, I mean, you have one, some here, some there, some here, from everywhere. So it's not very good for range queries. And when we delete, so if you delete the last one here, then we need to move them back from the overflow register, or from the second rehashed one, or from the open addressing. We just need to seek to see if there's someone that should be moved back. So there's some work when we delete, because in hashing, we really don't want just to mark them, because a hash is good when it's not too full. Once you get a full set of buckets here, then hashing works very badly. Once you need to have a lot of these overflow, then the hash doesn't work very well. I think we'll just take a break there, and then we'll start with the exercise when you come back. So you could be there, so if you want to look at it in the break, it's there.
Okay. Quickly, since we have the heap already up here, so let's do the heap, or the hash. The hash structure is already up here. So if you want to do the hash, inserting 2816, we hash, we find this goes in slot 6. There was good space, so here is 2816 stored in there. Next is 8003. The hash says we take the last digit, it's here, there's an empty slot, so that's why this one goes in here. 7034, last digit is 4, empty slot, it goes in here. And 1850, we already did that, it goes in here. So I guess Frode talked about this already, that hash files work nicely as long as they are not too full, or as long as data are evenly distributed. So we need to look at the hash function. The last digit is probably not a very good number to use, because you might see that there are some last digits that are much more there than the other. First digit, even so, because there's a geographical distribution there. So 0 is probably many more addresses starting with 0 than with 9. So finding a good hash function is a challenge. But for as long as we have a huge file, or a big file compared to the number of records, it should be okay. And with overflow mechanisms, if there's just one that is a bit of a trouble, it could be okay. But if you have a bit of four of these having most of the data, then it's not so good. But again, that's if you go into this, we need to do some more thinking and seeing the real data, see how it's distributed to decide the function. Ordered files. Okay, put the order here. So we have the database file here. We start by putting in 2816. Next one, 8003, goes to the end. Now, 7034 means that we need to push this one out, because this is 7034, and then 8003, and then when the last one comes, it pushes all of these over, because it needs to go in here. So these are pushed out. So we see in ordered files, there is a lot of work to do, potentially, when we insert an element, especially if they come kind of halfway or full way ordered in the wrong direction. So if they come with the biggest number first, then they're going to be pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. So if there's some order in the data, then it's a bad idea to have a sorted file on the reverse order. And then heap file would be the easiest. We get 2816. We get 8003. We get 7034. We get 1850. We just store them in this order they come. Very straightforward. Of course, in this one, it's easier. We could do binary search to quickly find the right one, or some search on the order set. In this one, we just look them up, which is very quickly. In this one, we had to scan the whole file to find what we're looking for. So, if we have these three alternatives, assume that we need to read all. Let's say we want to do an average or a sum. So, we need to read all records anyway. Then the question is, will the hash file be better or worse than the heap file? It's going to be worse, because this one, we just read the three. In this case, we need to go through
there is no one there, but we still need to read that. We need to go through each bucket and read all data. But there's no data here, no data there, no data here. So these blocks need to be read, even though there's no data there. So we need, as you said, we have much more reading activities. So heap files are not good for everything. Hash files aren't good for everything. Sometimes when we do that, we do a sum, or we do an average, or we find a mean or max value, we need to read everything. And hash files are not good for that. So we need to know, as I said before, data distribution. We need to know access pattern to really make a good decision as to how the structure is going to be like. So let's then look at indexes and the index file organization. The first thing we need to is kind of a bit of a terminology here, and an important one, and that goes, what's the difference between the primary and secondary index? A primary index is the index on the primary key. And the primary index makes it easy to, as we said before, find whether the primary key is, or whether it's already an object with that key. It's easy to find elements based on the primary key. And many times when we join, we will join based on primary key, or primary key and some other key, we will join them. So having an index on primary key makes sense, because we have then guaranteed uniqueness. And there can be only one primary key per file, because primary key defines in what order the base ordering of the records, and you can't have two. So when you define the primary key, so in MySQL, for instance, if you define a primary key, it will replace the previous primary key, because you can have only one primary key. And primary keys are always unique. Now, secondary indices, a primary indices are therefore also unique. Secondary indices are defined on any non-ordering field. So you can have a secondary index on last name, you can have a secondary index on, let's say, city they live in. And secondary indices, they don't have to be unique. They may be. So for instance, if you have an alternate key, if you remember we talked about, or Dipti talked about alternate keys, one way to enforce alternate key is to have a unique secondary index. Because that would be an index, and since it's unique, you won't accept multiple elements to have it. And so it will act as the primary key. But it's the alternate key, because you can have only one primary key. But other than that, usually you will want to allow secondary indices to have multiple, or that multiple records can have the same value. For instance, last name. In the database, you would like to have an index on last name, but you can't assume that people have unique last names. So you use it for, the indexes are used for performance. We're going to look at some numbers when we try to access data using indexes and see how much faster it will be to get data when you use the index. And we can have many, as many as we want, per file or per table if you want. And the issue that we need to think about is that if we have indexes, indexes also need to be updated when data is updated. So the more indexes we add, the slower update operations are going to be. So we need to think about that. And but it will potentially reduce access time significantly for large tables for certain queries. Not necessarily all queries, but certain queries. We also need to think about composite indexes. Composite means that they have multiple variables in the index or in the primary key, if that's what we're indexing. And we have to remember that they will be ordered. They will have to be ordered from most to least significant attribute. So for instance here, if we have a person with an ID, first name, last name, and address, then we may have an index on first name, last name, and or last name, first name. What we have to remember is that in the first one, we will have Per Amundsen, Per Berg,
Per, Farstad. So if you want to sort, get them sorted on first name, that's the perfect thing to do. If you want to be sorted on last name, this index won't help. It won't help at all, because they are here sorted on first name. The other one, we will have all Amundsen, Aril, Amundsen, Bjørn, Amundsen, Bodil, which will be perfect. So these will be sorted. So this is most significant, this is least significant. Most significant, least significant. So when we create an index, the first will be the most significant, so they will order on that one first. If there is equality on the first, then they will be sorted in order of the second one. Well, we're going to come back to this a couple of places, because this is important when we design our database and we design the primary keys. Oh, we come already here. I put it in here. So, this model, UML conceptual model, employee owns zero more phone numbers. What would the logical or relational model look like? Relational model. What do we see here? Well, we see two entities, and the entities, they map to tables. There is one relation, and this is a weak relation, and there's a one-to-one, so it means that we can have a foreign key on this side pointed to this one. And since it's weak and this is a partial key, the primary key would be the phone number and the staff number, which is where we're heading. So this is one alternative. We have the employee, and alternative A, we have the phone, we have the primary key being phone number and staff number. This is the phone, this is the staff. Alternative number B, we have again the phone, but in this case the primary key is staff number and then phone number. Are these equivalent? I mean, this index, which of the indices can be used if I want to search for a given phone number? Then this can be used. What index can be used if I want to find all phone numbers used by a certain person? Then this, because the staff number is first and I get all the numbers. Which is the correct one? Depends on what you want to accomplish, but the thing is that, as you probably noticed in MySQL, if you want to have a foreign key, then you need an index on this one, which means that this one is fine because you already have an index. The most significant can be used as the index. In this one, it can't be used. So in this case, if you want to do a foreign key, in this case, you will have to, in MySQL, create an index on staff number in addition to the primary key, primary index. Because for join, MySQL, to have joins efficiently, they would like to have index on all the attributes that you join. And here, the staff number is not indexed. Here it is part of the composite index. So this one case is fine. In this case, it's not. So when we define primary keys, we need to think about in what order the attributes of the key should be, because that's the order they're going to be sorted, and that makes difference as to what queries it will be efficiently supporting. Was that hard to understand? Good. Now, this is one of the former much used ways of organizing a file. So ESAM. So if some of you have been using MySQL, you have probably heard MyESAM. Use MyESAM as an engine, if you have not in this course, but before. Because in earlier versions of MySQL, MyESAM was the engine, the access method that was default. Now, in later years, it's been InnoDB, and InnoDB is using B-trees and heap and B-trees.
different ways of structuring. But ESAM is an index sequential access method. So we have indexes, kind of secondary indexes, on salary combined with branch number, on just salary. And you have a branch number, salary, and branch number. And the primary key is always ordered. So it's all the file is always an ordered file based on primary key. So the primary key will always order, and then you can have indexes on the side. So you have lots of indexes here that would point to the various records. So here you can find salaries in increasing order by going through these, and then you can read the database. You can get a record number, and you can go directly to the file to get the record number and then the block number. When you know the record number, you can find the block number, and then you know what you need to read from the from the disk. This was the first one, but as we saw here, ordered files are not very good if you have a database with lots of changes and lots of inserts. My ESAM and my SQL was mostly used for web applications, and web applications you rarely change and you read a lot. So it would make sense from that point of view. But these days, InnoDB is the standard. Then we come to B-trees, because B-trees is kind of the a crucial data structure for indexes in database, relational databases, I should say. You have been having balanced trees with Frode, and know the whole idea of balanced trees. So you have a number, and 3-4 trees, for instance. So you're going to split once you get past a certain size of each block, and you balance it. So it's always going to be the same depth. All leaf nodes are going to be the same distance from the root of the tree. So it's known to have a very efficient search structure. Now, if you think about the database, what is the major cost in the database when you want to read the file or read data? It's to read from disk. And as we talked about yesterday, disk reads are organized in blocks. So it's about so it means that reading a block is what takes time. So what we'll do here is to try to reduce the number of blocks you need to read to get to the data you need. That's the whole challenge here. And wipe this out. In a database, it will be advantageous to have a bushy tree. What does that mean? We want the tree to be as wide as possible. So what we typically do is that if we have, 16K per block, we would like to have as many nodes as possible in that block. Because we have to read it anyway. Then we can read as much of the tree as we want. Which means that in the B tree, you would typically have very low trees, but a huge number of children for each node. The principles are the same as any other balanced trees. The difference is that we typically have many more nodes in each at each level in the tree than you will have in memory tree. In memory tree, a binary tree, you split on two, so you have just two nodes here, or two choices. But in our case, you will have as many alternatives as possible going out. Because that would mean that we get to the bottom as quickly as possible. I mean, you have this, you have log X here, because the more nodes we can put in here, the shallower the shorter the tree is going to be. You get that? I mean, if you have 1 million nodes, and if you have 2 on each, it's going to be the power of 2. If you have 10 of each, then the power of 10. And obviously, log 10 of a number is going to be much smaller than log 2 of a number. So a B tree is a balanced tree, and you find different, you find B tree, B plus tree, B star tree, and they are variants of the same. So what we talk about here are B plus trees, and they we'll talk about the plus, what the plus gives us. So this is an example, obviously not a real example, since you have very few nodes, but it's hard to find a space to demonstrate a B tree with 300 nodes per or 300 records per node. The basic structure is you have a node here. It has a pointer, or it has three pointers. Each node in the tree has three pointers. The first pointer is typically used. And if we don't, okay, let's start at the bottom. At the bottom, the pointer before is pointing to the database file. So typically, B trees are used on top of heap files. So the database file is a heap file, as you see down here, in what the order they were inserted. That's the order they are stored in the heap file. Because heap file is easy to add, we just add it, and then the B tree is what is being used for the primary index and for seeing if it's unique and where it should be. And then this is stored in a separate file, an index file, where each block is an index node or a node in the index tree. And at the bottom, the leaves would point to records in the file here. So here, when you get to the leaf SA9, this pointer is pointing to the record in this file, in the base file, the database file. SG5 is a pointer to that record. So at the leaf nodes, you have the pointer before the index value is pointing to the actual record. Now the plus in the B plus is this pointer. This pointer in the leaf node will point to the next leaf index node, if you understand me. So this is the next node indexing the leaves, and this is the next, and this is the final one. Why do we want this? Well, it's pretty easy now to get them all in sorted order. To get the sorted order, I just go to the first leaf node, and then I just go through all the leaf nodes. If I want to get a sequence search starting from SG14, we go down here. It's larger than SG5, it's here. Okay, we just go through here and we find them all from SG14 to SL21. This is SG14, we're going to continue as long as we are less than or equal to SL21, we can process. SL21, we know that we're at the end, we can stop. You follow me? So a B-tree with these links down here makes it easier to do range queries. Because in range queries, we go down the tree to find the first one, and then we don't need to do more traversal of the tree. We just go along. This is like in XML next sibling. And we can just find the number of blocks. And per block, we're going to find quite a lot of indexes, quite a lot of records being indexed here. So we can find in the range query, we can find quite a lot with few accesses, file accesses. The balance tree beyond here has, as I said, two, or here we have a number of index values, and the pointers are so that, and they are sorted. If you see here, they are sorted in the index block, and the pointer before is here pointing to the, this is the highest value of the subtree on this side. And the next pointer points then to everything higher than SG5. SG5 or lower would be on this side. SG14 would be on this side. Anything higher than SG14 is going to be on this side. And here, we didn't have it all filled up. So if in the second one, if it's less than the second one, larger than this one, then it's obviously not in this tree. Larger than the second, less than this one, then it will go here. So in this one, the final ones are not used, only on the leaf nodes. You kind of get the picture. So it's a balanced tree, so meaning that when we insert here, if you, for instance, insert SA16, then this node will have to split, and we're going to move, split it, and move up, which means that we are full up here as well. So we have kind of sequence of splitting and you need to rearrange. Well, in this case, you could possibly just move this one over to the next one. So SA16, this one could go over here, and then you have a balanced here, and next one, then this is going to split as well. So we have some rearranging of the tree to do. But do you have, I think Frode has been doing some balanced tree operations with you, so you know that theory. And same here, it's just that you have more nodes per than three. In a 2-3 node, you have three. In this case, you have many more. So remember, per record, we have as many index values as we can fit, and we need pointers, the number of index values plus one. You see here, when we have two values, we need three. We need to the first and to the last and to the next. Here, we need for each of the values plus to the next index node in this sequence, so that we can for ordered queries or range queries, we can just go that link. So we have n pointers to children, and we have n minus one keys, or we have n keys and n plus one pointers. They aren't all to children. It's wrong to say n pointers to children. There are n pointers. If you remember the leaf node, the n pointers, there are n minus one to children, and the first last one is to the sibling. But it, at least it has n pointers and n minus one keys. And root must have at least two children if it's not a leaf. And all nodes should be balanced, meaning they have at least n half nodes. And at the most n half pointers, and the most n pointers. The tree is balanced, and as you can see, the leaf nodes are linked. So we can go through this through the whole database by just following the link, and then you get them in order, which is nice both for ordered searches and for range searches. Now, how deep is this B tree going to be? And in this case, we should ideally talk about best case and worst case, because we don't know for a real tree. We have n half, between n half and n. So the x is between n half and n. So worst case, the tree only contains half full nodes, and obviously going to be deeper. And if we are very lucky and fill it up nicely, fully balanced, we're going to be log n. But sometimes we're just going to be log n half. But if you do say, what is the best case? How many nodes can we deal with? Then, if we have this here where we have an car of 8 bytes, I had a comment during the break. When we say 4K, in this case we use 4096 bytes, not 4,000 bytes. And the reason for that is that we are very much depending on the address space. So 4096 is a useful disk block size because it's divisible with 8, so you can get it to be a complete number of bytes to address. And since the number of bytes to address is what matters here, we deal with, when we say KB, we means 1024 and not 1000. So that you can, so it will go up, so we can make a complete number of bytes to address a block. So here we have the size of a block. There could be n, and for each n, if you remember the structure here, so for each n, we have a pointer plus the value. We have a pointer plus the value, pointer plus the value, and then we have a pointer at the end. So you have one pointer more than values. So for 8
how many nodes can we get, how many values can we get. We have the n, which is 4 plus 8, the 4 bytes here and 8 bytes for the character. And then we have 4. Now, if we try to find the number of index pointers per block, we find that in this case, we can get 342 index pointers, because there are 341 values. If you do this division, you find there are 341 values and 342 pointers. So at the first level, we have 341. Then at the second, if there's just one level, we have 341. If you have two levels, you have 341 times 342, because then we have the, if you remember, the number of you have pointer before and after. So for this value, we have before and after. So we have one more pointer out than the number of values in the node. But not for the leaf nodes. For the leaf nodes, that one pointer is going to the next block. So on three levels, we have at the max almost 40 million values in three levels. So by accessing the disk three times, we will get to know the position of any file if the record is less than 40 million and if it's totally balanced. As I said, that's the ideal case. In real cases, you won't get up to that number. In real cases, it would get to level to a fourth level long before this is filling up. But at the best, we can get 40 million in three levels. And in these database systems, very often the first index block is cached in memory, which means that you need to go to the disk only two times, not three times, to get to this. Yeah, we talked about this before. So if we have these three, how can we access to get them all in sorted order? I think I already told you that. Sorted order, it's easy. We started from the beginning, so we just find the first, and here we could just go the index block, and SA9, we have the pointer here, SJ5 is here, SJ14 here, so we can access them in that order. So finding the sequence, the sorted order is easy. So how many disk blocks would we need to access when using the index to get all records in the range SG14 to SL21? SG14, SL21. SG14 is here. SL21 is here. How many disk blocks would we need? Assuming that nothing is cached, what would the database do? Well, it will start by reading this one. That's one. It will read this one. That's two. It will read this one. That's three. It will have to read this one. That's four. It will have to read this one. That's five. It will have to read this one. That's six. It will read this one. That's seven. And that is 20, is eight. So if you need to read, if you're happy just knowing ID or the index value, you don't have to read the actual file. But if you need to go to get the record, to get more data, you actually need to read these. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 index blocks, and there is 1, 2, 3 data blocks to read. So when we do this computation, we need to remember to see how many index blocks and how many data blocks we need to read to get the old content. Yeah. Now,
how many disk blocks we will need to retrieve all records for staff having manager as the position. It's unindexed. So how we do that? The index can't be used, so we basically have to go through. In this case, it was a bad idea using the B-tree in the first place, because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is easy, is cheaper to mostly read it, the whole database there, rather than going through the index structure. But if this, if you said if it was very bushy, then at this level we will have a million or so, and we had to read through all million, because what we look for, manager as the position, is not indexed, and we then need to get all the records. And since it's a heap file, we will have to read from the beginning to the end. So the number of blocks in the file is what we're going to be having. B-tree index is the most used one, and you'll find that in InnoDB. You have B-trees on primary keys, and whenever you create an index, it will be a B-tree index on top of the secondary indexes. It will be an index on top of the heap file structure, which is the underlying structure in InnoDB. But in some cases, you may want to use bitmap index. And a bitmap index is very useful if you have a number, a large number of alternative values. They are known what the possible values are, but it's a large number, and some of the records would have one or the other value. Then instead of keeping an index here on the a B-tree, we could just have a bitmap index, which says that for the first we have pop, for the second for the hip hop, it's the second CD contact is hip hop. Hard rock is 1, 2, 3, 4th. Living things is hard rock. Classical is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 is classical, and choirs is the 6th. Pop is the 1st. Punk is, so you see, you reverse it. So it's easy to find all punk by just going through here, and then you find, okay, it's the 6th one. That is punk. And they can be overlapping. In this case, they were kind of singular value, but if they had accepted multiple values, you could possibly also have here. So you could find the same CD for multiple of these classes. So that's one way to have a very compact and good index if you have a set of possible values and the records are distributed over these values. So, a little bit of a review. What is the primary key? Do you remember? This is important. Primary key, what is it? No, sorry, primary index. And why do we want primary index? Yeah? Well, that's the primary key. You need to identify that's the primary key. But why do you want to index the primary key? Yeah, one is to sort. You may not always sort, but at least you need to find if it's unique, and that's a good way to find, because when it's sorted and insert in sort order, you're quickly going to find if it's unique. And also, as we talked about in relational databases, joins are very popular, and in joins you are typically joining on the keys, and that means that you can quickly find a record based on its primary key. You can quickly find it. Secondary index. Secondary indexes are on any other field, being profession, being last name, being age, being whatever, that we think it would be useful, will help us speed up the retrieval time if we have an index there. And they don't have to be unique, the primary key will be. Yeah, I think we covered the differences in that discussion. Oops, this one should be black, sorry. In SQL, indexes. The SQL standard doesn't say anything about indexes, but all database vendors implement a create index statement. So indexes may be unique, but that means they don't need to be. If you define a primary key in MySQL, you automatically also create the primary index. So the secondary indexes are the ones that you create with this function. So you create an index, you give it a name, and you say what table and what column, and this, as I said, this is going to be the most significant attribute first and least significant at the very end. So it's going to be sorted on the most significant first. And then we can drop it. Cover indexes more detail tomorrow. I think that was an old statement. That was from before. Sorry for that. So, final exercise. Assume that we have this database. We have user with ID, name, address, gender, and phone. We have 60,000 records, which would be divided on 1,500 disk blocks. And we have 75,000 phone numbers, but since the phone numbers are smaller, we can fit them into fewer disk blocks. 50,000 blocks of user data and 1,000 blocks of phone data. Now, we want to retrieve all female users, because we have a gender here, all female users, and we need to, and we want to find also the phones that they belong to. In a heap file and no indexes. How much work would it be to do this? Assuming that we can't, the database is too big that we can keep it all in memory. So we can read one block, and when we have read it once, we read another block. And so we may need to reread the same block several times. Every time we need to read it from the disk. So if you assume that there's only room for one block in memory, as I said, there's no caching. What we would need to do? Okay, so that means that we have 15,000 blocks. Then we have read all of them. And for all of them, we're gonna read. Read out the females. So if you say that they are half of them, so for half of them, these are female, we need to get the phone numbers. Sorry? Then we need to read the phone files. And the worst case, and we will always need to read all 1,000, because we don't know whether they had the first or last number. They are not ordered, so we need to read all to find the numbers, because they are spread around in here. So that is 7.5 million blocks to read. We could do it the other way. We could start by reading the 1,000 phone numbers. And for each of these phone number, we need to find the user, and we know there is a user, but on average, we need to read only half of them on the average, because some are early in the file, some are late in the file. So, we can do 50,000 divided by 2. 15,000 divided by 2, which is also 7.5 million. 7.5 million. It would be the same in this case, because we could sort on gender, assuming if there were less female, we would get better off this way. More females, we will get worse off, because then we had to go into read more of these files. Now, if we have index on ID in user table, so in the user table, we have an ID, and for the ID, and we have 1500 blocks, and ID is an int, so let's say we can do that in two level B tree. So we have a B tree of two levels. And then they point down to the data file. Okay? So we start by reading, we can start by reading 1000, and which are the disk blocks of phone number, and for each phone number we can look up the user going through this index. So we read 1, 2, and since we need a gender, we need 3, because gender is not stored in the index file, so we need to read this file as well. So 1000 times 3, so that should be 3000 using the index, because now we can look up the actual